You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. The one and only Sandy Williams is back.
Yeah, he's back. We missed him on Friday.
Like an old penny. Just keep showing up in your pocket.
Hey, it's Tuesday, and that means my co-host Sandy Williams has returned.
I have returned. I was in San Francisco. I didn't leave my heart there.
Well, let me ask you, because I haven't been to San Francisco, but I've been reading a lot in conservative newspapers and others, and San Francisco is a hellhole.
Well, it isn't a hellhole, but I will tell you that very expensive residential costs there have caught up with San Francisco. And I was talking to vendors and talking to people who live in San Francisco. And so the pandemic, which created the opportunity for virtual work, caused lots of people in San Francisco and California was sort of the center of virtual work in it anyway. So virtual working took people out of the downtown so that they weren't coming downtown to work anymore. And the offices are now empty. You know, they're not what they used to be, and because virtual work has continued, only some places have insisted that people come back to work. But many people not only stopped coming to the office in San Francisco, but they sought cheaper housing because everyone knew that San Francisco was the highest priced housing market in the country. And it was pricing itself out of reach for many, many workers. And many workers resorted then to moving from San Francisco, working virtually for their San Francisco employer. And it's had a serious effect on downtown San Francisco. I did not see all of the homelessness and drugs, you know, the stuff that people are talking about, like all of those horrors. But it is true that Union Square, the famous Union Square that has all this big-time shopping there, finds many of the big department stores closing, just like they are all around the country. That started happening there, too. So, you know, whereas many cities are reviving, I think San Francisco got too far ahead of the curve on the cost of housing. And magnificent place that it is, you know, it's going to take a while, I think, for its housing costs to get into range such that it rebounds.
You know, when you talk about housing costs, and they talk about that in this nation, it's not as if you just snap your finger and all of a sudden housing costs comes into affordability.
Well, it's you know, supply and demand, number one. But number two, rents come down slowly. They don't come down quickly. Rents go up rather quickly when they can. You know, this is not something that's the result of inflation. This is the result of long-term trends as well as a big outgrowth of the pandemic. I'm sure during the pandemic, they did have quite a bit of homelessness. I mean, one of the problems for places that are seasonably warm all year round is homelessness. I mean, it is, you know, it's harder to be homeless in Milwaukee than it is to be homeless in San Francisco. And I know this because I had a sad story of a friend who actually became homeless. I talked to him later, and he said he actually moved to San Diego because he knew he was homeless.
So let me ask you, Sandy, when you look at all of those spectacular skyline of San Francisco, and like I said, I haven't seen it in person, but I've seen it, and you look at all of that, and certainly the people who own those luxurious office buildings and all of that, they're struggling financially.
Oh yeah,
I mean, you know how what happens. You can't allow that to.
Well,
the nation, buildings have to be kept up. What?
Well, the nation is worried. I mean, the national economy is to some extent worried about commercial real estate, because the effect of the pandemic and virtual work was to substantially reduce the occupancy rate, the square footage requirements per employee for commercial space went down materially. Many places resorted to having, instead of an office for somebody, they called this motel concept, where people have an office they can use, but it's not their office because they're only there 3 days a week, and they sort of move in and out of offices that are available to them. That significantly reduces the square footage requirement for, let's say a company has 3,000 employees.
Right.
They used to need X thousand square feet for that. Now they need X, maybe X over two, half of that, for that same number of employees, which reduces the demand for commercial real estate, which is already in existence. So, you know, there is a concern in many cities. Milwaukee and Wisconsin, I'm sure, has the same situation
right
around many of the towns.
So when you talk about the demand for commercial real estate, Sandy, contrast that, and it's now in a tough situation, as you're stating. Does that have impact on everything else in the country?
Well, people invest, you know, there's a lot of money that's invested in commercial
right
real estate. And if those loans go bad, which is the worry, you know, that's that people who own buildings that become lose their demand for their space, those owners go bankrupt. This happened to the 100 East building in Milwaukee not so long ago. So that bankruptcy has impacts on the financial community if that becomes a widespread phenomenon. But what's interesting to watch is the fact that we have a substantial shortage of residential living units, and we have a surplus of commercial units. And we're seeing in many cities commercial buildings that are being converted to residential buildings.
Right.
And so, you know, the commercial real estate marketplace is trying to adjust to the situation. And ultimately, it will happen. But real estate doesn't happen overnight. You know, it takes a while to build a building. It takes a while to change the configuration of a building. So, you know, it's a business cycle that has a little bit of a longer sine wave.
So let me ask you again, because, you know, you always make me think with your answers. So you look at all of these spectacular buildings that once housed corporations and companies and all of that, and people worked in those facilities, they made good money.
Yeah.
When they take those people away, they can't afford to live in those extravagant places anymore.
The people that most of the changes now are the result of virtual work.
Right.
Okay. So these people,
which
are still
is not going away,
they're still working and still earning money. Many businesses are trying to reduce the amount of virtual work that is ongoing. Many companies are realizing that interfacing with one another is an important part of the creative process that's involved with their business. It's a big part of the effective activity that's required of a team in a business environment. So, you know, there's a trend that's moving away from so much virtual work, and particularly in the situation where businesses are no longer experiencing a shortage of the kind of workers they need. Workers had a great deal of leverage, and they've been actually able to sort of demand the right to work virtually. As they lose that leverage, their ability to demand virtual work is going to diminish. Part of the virtual work attractiveness was the avoidance of child daycare costs, right? So that if you can work virtually, one or the other of a team of a couple that has children, you can work it out so you don't need child daycare, which is, for a couple of kids, could cost $30,000 a year.
The flip side of that is you look at a corporation like Northwest Mutual in Milwaukee.
Right.
That is doing the exact opposite. They're building the campus.
Well, what's happened actually, truthfully, there, and Northwestern Mutual has said this in what they've put out, they built that beautiful new all-glass building downtown, and now it is not fully occupied. The new campus they're building is actually replacing a building in Franklin, a big campus they have in Franklin.
Right.
They're moving people, and I think they're actually going to reduce the number of square feet that they have committed to by all of that space that they had in Franklin is being shut down.
Right.
And what they're doing in downtown is renovating an existing building, so they're not increasing the square footage by anything like the amount of square footage they're reducing. by moving out of that campus in Franklin.
So I guess I was under the assumption, and I have forgotten that that's one of the reasons they were doing it, but and I thought they were doing it in contrast to many of the other people who think that, you know, people working from home is the answer.
Well, I think, you know,
because some companies are demanding that the people come back now.
Well, to its credit, in Milwaukee, a great deal of the employers in Milwaukee are realizing the benefit of locating their facilities in downtown Milwaukee, because not only is it attractive to workers to work on teams creatively with one another, but it's also much more attractive to workers to work in an urban center where there are places to go to lunch.
Yeah, beautiful.
Places to go out for a walk, walk around it, you know.
Safe.
So you're in a safe, but also an interesting and hospitable environment that is socialized.
Right.
And not isolated.
Yeah. And so you, I was reading, saw something the other day. Milwaukee is considered one of the top cities in the United States.
Yeah. Milwaukee is, you know, I think
that blew my mind.
Well, it's got so many advantages. So you don't have to go to many cities and sit in your car in traffic very long to realize that we have a huge advantage with respect to convenience. You can live outside the city and get into the city to work very easily. Milwaukee has this changing environment downtown. Many people are choosing to live downtown. The Milwaukee River has become a beautiful resource.
They're getting ready to expand it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's beautiful apartments under construction right now. That there's more on the way, and they have the river walkway that's soon going to go the entire length of the urban part of the river.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, a lot to talk about this morning with Sandy Williams. Always good to have him in. Good to have him back. So Sandy, when we come back, I need you to explain to those of us who struggle sometimes with all this legalese. Elon Musk, his pact is talking about giving $47.
It's an interesting number, isn't it?
Yeah, I wonder where he got that.
Yeah, it's going to require a change in your pocket kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, for people who are going
I know why 47. President number 47.
Oh. All right. Yeah, that's why Sandy Williams is here.
Wow.
855-752-4842 is Tuesday, and my co-host Sandy Williams is back. That's early Frank Sinatra.
Early Frank Sinatra.
This is his voice matured.
This is like Tommy Dorsey band Frank Sinatra.
Keeps raining all the time.
This is a Frank Sinatra you and I never heard.
Well, I remember kind of hearing this in, you know, I'm a aficionado of old 40s movies.
Yeah, this is like so, from a movie.
I'm pretty sure that I saw him sing in one of the old movies. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is my co-host is Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you're trotting out Frank Sinatra.
Well, I'm trotting out music.
Early Frank
music
Sinatra.
About stormy weather because, God, you know, if people don't, you know, in fact, I saw Donald Trump questioning whether we had global climate change because he said, you know, it was kind of cold last year. Well, clearly the intensity of the storms is unbelievable. And we have, after Hurricane Helene, right on the heels, we have Hurricane Milton, whose velocity, and if, first of all, the rate of intensity and change, it's called, I don't know the exact term, but the rate at which the storms get worse is the result in many cases of the change in the climate that has put more moisture in the air, put more heat in the air. And, you know, Milton went from a Category 1 to a Category 5 in something like 24 hours. It's now at Category 4, I think. It's projected to be Category 3 when it lands, but it's going to have a much bigger size than normal as the result. It's apparently going to be horrific.
Well, 15-foot
surge.
Surge.
Yeah.
And so they were talking about the fact that the land, the heat, the temperature of the land is going to be 85 around there, and that fuels
right
the ferocity.
Right. So, I mean, you know, the combination of that, that's the problem I think they're finding out with the global climate change, is that there there are things that compound on one another that are moving and getting warmer. You know, for instance, the melting of the glaciers seems to be at an accelerating rate because of some compounding issues that relate to things interacting with one another and causing it to happen faster and faster. And so, you know, it's, I think scientists have constantly been decreasing the amount of time they think it's going to take for the global to warm in the manner that they find to be particularly troublesome and dangerous in terms of its effect on the height of water, et cetera.
So, Sandy, let me, because there's so many people pointing the finger at the Biden-Harris, you know, leadership.
What, for causing the storms?
Well, not causing.
But no, I know, but but to be honest with you, when you have storms like this that are immense, number one, number two, change rapidly. Okay, first of all, the people have done a pretty good job of predicting these things, but the fuse they have. Or the lead time they have is shortened immensely when storms become intense so rapidly as the result of the conditions in the Gulf and the conditions in the climate. And so like Milton sprang up and,
right,
and was very, very rapid in its development. So then the ability to line up all of the emergency equipment and to the emergency response becomes more difficult with the speed and intensity, the speed of development of intense storms. And so has any emergency response ever been perfect? Some have been much less perfect than others, but none of them have been perfect. And there is always a lessons learned process that follows any storm to figure out what we did wrong and what we can do better. I think that people's view of the response to Hurricane Helene was that it was quite good. It's just that the storm was out of bounds.
Well, clearly you haven't been watching Fox News.
Well, I know, but I mean, it's easy after the fact. You know, the fact is that the response to Katrina was abysmal.
Right.
Okay. and President Bush got criticized for it and should have, and FEMA got criticized for it and should have. But furthermore, the level of preparedness of something like FEMA is something that also is something that isn't instantaneous. It builds up over time. It's the result of the expertise in the agency that is the result of the retention of civil servants over time. You know, the very attack of the right on government is the kind of thing that threatens the capacity of something like FEMA to be as competent as it needs to be when we have disasters.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because there's been a really onslaught that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, because of Hurricane Helena going up as far as it did, North Carolina,
yeah,
Georgia, and up in the mountains, and they haven't gotten there, and they've been blamed for not supporting those people because they're MAGA people.
I've not heard any of the governors of those states.
No, the governors haven't said that.
Suggested any of that. Okay. I've not heard anything other than third parties trying to attribute problems where the parties on the ground are not making those same accusations. I think they all want they all want aid as rapidly as possible. But I've not heard any governors stand up to criticize the Washington response as being anything less than as rapid as possible, which is about all you can ask for, because there is an as possible element to this ability to line up emergency support.
So when you look at FEMA right now being stretched in dealing with Helena, and now this is coming behind it.
Yeah.
FEMA is not the military. It doesn't have the manpower, correct me if I'm wrong, deal with a second issue when they're still trying to deal with this.
Well, the fact is that Biden's White House did enlist the help of the military and got, I don't know what number of hundreds of military assigned to the process of assisting in the attempt to save a bunch of potential victims.
All right, 855-752-4842. It is Tuesday, and I mean it's Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. When we come back, we'll talk about Elon Musk and how you can get $47, for registering people to vote.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
That sounds like Johnny Cash.
Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
Who?
The Doors.
Oh, The Doors.
Like a dog without a bone and actor out.
Yeah, Brendan got it. Doors, he got it right away.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays. With the one and only Sandy Williams, my co-host. Sandy, the music.
Storms. That's pretty self-explanatory. The Florida's being buffeted. People who doubt global climate change ought to understand that the intensity, the rate of increase of intensity, and the dollars and cents effect and the human toll of these storms is completely unprecedented. And you can tell it's unprecedented because buildings that have been there for a long, long time are suddenly being damaged terribly. So it didn't happen before, but it's happening now.
So for those of you who didn't see presidential candidate and Vice President Kamala Harris appeared on 60 Minutes last night, you've been hearing she's afraid to show up. She's afraid to be interviewed. She's afraid to answer questions. Well, you don't get any bigger than 60 Minutes, the audience.
Well, and only one person didn't show up.
Yeah. Repeat that, sir.
Only one person didn't show up for it. And I thought the guy who led into it, his explanation about Trump not showing up was pretty telling.
So for those who say, she's scared, she's hiding, she showed up last night. Sandy, she was asked some tough questions.
Yeah, I read the transcript. I didn't watch the whole thing, but this morning I read and scanned the transcript. And, the guy did a good job of pushing to make sure that the questions got answered. But she did answer the questions when pushed. Every politician has the beginning of an answer to every question, which is a talking point based.
Right.
And yes, she probably initiated her response to a number of the questions in that fashion. But he pushed, she answered. And I don't think she evaded any of the questions ultimately. And I thought that there was actually a substantial amount of detail that she discussed with respect to the policies. Unlike someone who says, elect me, I'll fix it. She actually talked about the policies that would be aimed at fixing it. And she also talked about the issues that needed fixing with, I thought, a fair amount of specificity. So I was pretty impressed, actually, with her presentation. I'm sure the conservative media wants to pick apart whatever it is she said and whatever it is that she didn't say. But I think that any objective observer could read that transcript and see a candidate who had a finger on the issues and also had a knowledge of and her finger on the answers.
855-752-4842. Did you watch the interview of vice presidential and president and presidential candidate Kamala Harris last night on
60 Minutes.
60 Minutes. You know, Sandy, in listening to her, the guy asked her, well, it's been said that you have been changing your mind and people don't know you. And she said, well, yeah, as I've traveled around the country and talked to people. Isn't that a good answer?
Well, actually, I think someone who's intransigent in their views is suspect, right? I mean, if every time you make a statement or stake out a position, you're required to be entrenched in that position, why, then there's no process going forward for movement or for rationalization or for conversion to some other better view. I think that politicians should be congratulated to the extent that they seem to flex their position in a manner that is responsive to better public policy and to meet the needs of the people. I think if one did an analysis of her opponent's positions over a lifetime, you'd find someone who had no position that mattered to them at any point during their life. You know, he's flip-flopped on every position. He was a Planned Parenthood advocate of abortion rights, and then he nominated for justice people who destroyed Roe v. Wade, and he did that purposefully. You know, he's flip-flopped on just about every issue. But my main point with respect to Donald Trump is I've never heard him discuss a policy, okay? I've never heard him discuss a policy. I've heard him describe problems. I've heard him describe with hyperbole and magnification and falsehoods problems. And then I've only heard him say, elect me and I'll solve it. But I've never heard him discuss the policies that are associated with the solution. You know, and if you look at the economics of his policies, you know, $7.5 trillion of debt over the next decade, you know, her policies, yes, have $3 trillion of debt, but she's talking about actually taxing the rich in a way that could eat into the level of that. That $3 trillion is without any increase in taxes. That's an estimate of the cost of her programs, not the revenue that might be generated from other issues.
You know, Sandy, when you say that we're this far into this, you know, election, and have you ever seen a candidate for president of the United States who hasn't given any specifics about anything that they're going to do? I mean, they don't get away with that, right?
No, I mean, Donald Trump not only doesn't give specifics, but to the extent that there's a document out there, Project 2025, which has been generated by his supporters, which describes a whole bunch of things that are going to be accomplished, and he says, no, I have nothing to do with that, okay? And so, you know, he basically has just made promises associated with solving problems, some of which are bogus, the so-called rising crime rate in the country, when in fact we have a falling crime rate, you know, the immigration, which incidentally, she was pushed hard on that immigration issue last night on 60 Minutes and talked about the immigration policy, talked about the evolution of the views there, talked about the fact that presentations at the border today are way down. They're down at the level below what they were before 2020. So there is a problem at the border. There was a bipartisan bill to solve it. Donald Trump has never addressed that particular bill other than saying that he didn't like it and he's going to do better. But is he going to do better? That was a bipartisan congressional bill, okay? And the ability of the incumbent president to continue to stifle the border migration, which was premised on an order that was premised on COVID, okay, the Donald Trump embargo was premised on the COVID pandemic, which I had lifted, okay? And so the legal underpinnings for it had lifted. Now, they're continuing, they're in the process now, the Biden White House is, of trying to do whatever they can with executive order to deal with the border, absent the adoption of the bipartisan bill, which was drafted by conservatives and liberals and deep six by Donald Trump.
So, Sandy, we're less than 30 days out. Is there anything that can transpire, in your mind that can move people who are undecided right now on either side of the equation? Do you think there's...
Well, the polls seem to show that there's continuing movement, so it's small, but the fact is that we're dealing with razor's edge here, apparently, in terms of I think that there is the possibility of the kind of movement that could affect the election. It's not seismic, but it doesn't need to be seismic to affect elections, which in the state of Wisconsin could amount to a margin of 25,000 or 40,000. Are there 40,000 people undecided in Wisconsin? I'll bet there are.
All right, let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, guys. Appreciate you taking my call, as always. I thought it'd be interesting to add to your discussion this morning the excuses that Donald Trump used to back out of the commitment that he had made prior to be on 60 Minutes. One excuse was he thought Dana Bash was not polite to him, so he wanted an apology. And the other one is he said, well, you guys, you're going to fact check me, and we can't, just like Vance the other day. what are you doing fact checking me? And I thought to myself, and I've said this a couple times on your show, whose election is this? Is it a party? Is it Democrats? Is it Republicans? Whose is it? And I keep on coming up with only one answer, and that answer is it's the people's election. It's not CNN. It's not CBS. It's not Fox News. It's not Donald Trump. It's not the commentators. It's none of theirs. It's the public's election. And I think one of the first things that we need to do in order to gain control of this stuff is accept the fact that this is ours, not theirs, to manipulate and create their own little rules. No. This is the American people's. And that's really who I'm fighting for. We've been getting the short end of the stick for a long, 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 long time. Lying now is normalized within one of the parties. And meanwhile, all this work needs to be done. All these things need to be tended to by, our elected officials. And for whatever reason, they don't feel the ownership or the commitment to do the people's work like I believe they should. So I just wanted to chime in real quick and remind people that those are the two reasons that Donald Trump provided.
Well, Mike, I think it's very well said. Somebody has to apologize to him. So, Sandy, here he gets an opportunity.
Well, and actually the fellow on the 60 Minutes show at the opening of the show pointed that out and pointed out that he was asking her to apologize for something she didn't do in the prior show based on the transcript of the prior show.
How can you say that Kamala Harris is afraid? She shows up, she's there. He made a commitment, but he didn't think he was going to be treated fairly. Well, what does that mean? Well, they're going to fact check me.
Well, to me, the notion that someone would not want to be fact-checked suggests something about what it is they expect they're going to be saying. You know, fact-checking suggests that they're going to be held to some form of reality that they aren't comfortable with.
Well, Sandy, fact-checking means there's a possibility that you aren't going to be totally truthful.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? You know, I mean, and you don't want anybody to push back with you not being truthful.
Well, and I thought that the commentator did push back with Kamala.
Yeah, he did.
In terms of, I don't think she had so many statements that were not factual, but he pushed back when she maybe got into campaign speak instead of specific right. answers and pushed her to the point of making answers.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show. Hang on the phone line.
Wasn't that a mighty storm, yeah? Wasn't that a mighty storm in the morning? Wasn't that a mighty storm, man? Blew all the people away. Guy was standing high, sea wall, meant to keep the water down. Hot tide from the ocean, some water rolled over.
All right, welcome back. That's kind of catchy.
It is.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams. Sandy, who was that?
That was James Taylor. That was Mighty Storm. Music's all about storms.
Speaking of storms, let's do this before we go to the phone line. So, the one thing we do know about the difference between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump is if she doesn't have to know every answer, she's going to surround herself with competent people, which is the way our system is set, of government is set up, right? You have all these people who are in different departments who will deal with different issues. It's never been about one person taking on the weight of the world's issues by themselves.
Well, certainly that would, I mean, definitely so. I mean, there's no one person who could possibly run something as complicated as the United States of America and all of its facets, right? I mean, the notion, I mean, what you can get is you can get direction. There's policies. You need, you know, there is, the buck does stop there. So that person
right.
has to be capable of making good decisions after being given all kinds of opinions and advice from
cabinet,
from cabinet and others, other experts, right?
Right.
But what you really hope for is a president who will surround themselves with a great deal of expertise. And she talks about her desire to have not only expertise, but competing notions, competing views. And, you know, being a lawyer myself, I understand the desirability of having competing views presented, so that you can sift through that to try and make sure that what you don't do is head off in a direction that's based on bias instead of real facts. And, you know, I think that that's a very promising aspect of an administration of the sort that she would have. And I think it's, if I could look at a defect of the prior performance of her opponent during his 4 years in office, I would say a glaring defect was the failure to be surrounded by experts and the failure to have a reasoned, non-chaotic process for making decisions.
All right, let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. She avoids real interviews, kind of the way.
Wait a minute. 60 minutes is not a real interview?
No, if you recall when Donald Trump did the Leslie Stahl interview and he brought up the 51 former justice officials that claimed that the Hunter Biden laptop was disinformation. Well, we didn't get an apology.
Well, wait. I'm sorry, but if you watch the beginning of the debate, the commentator said that the transcript revealed that she didn't say that.
Leslie Stahl argued with him that it was factual during the interview.
Okay.
So 60 Minutes, you should be a great interview. Right, Sandy? They claimed that it was false. The 51 officials claimed it was false. We now know that is not true.
Well, that isn't what Leslie Stahl. I'm just saying he wanted an apology from 60 Minutes, which is a goofy concept. What, he didn't get treated exactly as he wished? But he wanted an apology for something that wasn't said by Leslie Stahl. So, I mean, did she need to apologize about the 51 officials?
Now let's go to VP Harris.
Okay, we ducked that one, didn't we?
That interview was disgusting because it was factually false.
What was factually false? Hey, CJ.
Song and dance all you want. The 60 Minutes was wrong, and Leslie Stahl was
okay,
wrong.
Okay, all right, CJ. This is all what you're doing now. You've called in what to sanctify the excuse that Donald Trump gave for not being on the show, because you started the statement by saying that we have the Vice President Harris presidential candidate who refuses to go on shows. She went on this show and was interviewed, wasn't she?
Yes, she was, and it was disgusting to see her claim to support Israel the way she did, not show up for Netanyahu's speech to Congress. She had a campaign issue. Really? She claims to support Israel?
So let me say this. I'm going to take the advice of one of the texters, Sandy, and he's right. Tony says, why are you getting into a fight with him over semantics? An argument that leads to nothing productive,
yeah,
or about what government could be doing. Tony, thank you for bringing us back to reality. Thank you very much for the call, CJ. He's absolutely correct.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, if you want to duck the issue, this is a shiny object. This kind of argument is a shiny object argument. It distracts from reality.
Yeah. And so, again, Tony, thank you. It does not matter to say that 60 Minutes is, you know, not a reputable, you know, place for her to appear on is ridiculous. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. It means my co-host Sandy Williams is here.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.